It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
We don't know who they are. Necessarily who funds them, who organizes them.
A common concern from leaders both Republican and Democrat as violence erupts in cities like Portland, Seattle, and Kenosha, Wisconsin. Authorities are working hard to weed out the ringleaders. Fox News can confirm state and federal law enforcement began tracking out-of-state agitators shortly after George Floyd's death in May. Attorney General Bill Barr toured the riot aftermath in Kenosha yesterday alongside President Trump.
We were picking up information that these violent instigators were coming to Kenosha. They were coming from California, Washington State, a lot from Chicago.
Last week, 17-year-old Kyle Rittenhouse shot and killed two men protesting in Kenosha. The teenager traveled across state lines from Illinois into Wisconsin.
Out of the 175 arrests that have been made there locally, 100 individuals are from out of state. So we know they're traveling. We know they're traveling from places like Portland to D.C.
Over the weekend, during a protest in Washington, D.C., police arrested a man recklessly driving a van. It was registered in another Washington State. His charges later dropped.
We have intelligence to suggest that van was also at some of the violence we saw in Portland, Oregon, and some of the violent activity that we saw in Kenosha.
As officials look for coordination, the president offering no proof weighed in on potential funding sources.
The money is coming from somewhere.
Money is coming
from, how can it be tracked?
From some very stupid rich people that have no idea that if their thing ever succeeded, which it won't, they will be thrown to the wolves like you've never seen before.
And this afternoon, the attorney general said his office has received reports of people coming to Washington and other cities to riot. Tuesday, the Department of Justice announced a criminal investigation, Brett, looking specifically at the funding for groups that are rioting.
All right, that was David Spunt from Fox News yesterday. Sandy Rios back with you, back in the studio this morning from Tupelo. What a nice it's nice for me to get back and actually see the staff eye to eye and be with Tim and the team. And so it was a great blessing. But here we are back in the studio. And of course, there's so much news that I need to get right to it. David was talking about paid protesters. The thing that I just want to correct before I even get into the rest of this, he mentions Kyle Rittenhouse in the same breath as though Kyle Rittenhouse was coming in from out of state, you know, an out of state person brought in to protest. This is the kid that the 17-year-old kid who killed two Antifa protesters, from my understanding, and shot one more. I've already told you about the criminal records. And Kyle, of course, they were trying to kill him. Here's the thing. Where he lives is 20 minutes. Kenosha is right on the border of Wisconsin and Illinois. And Kyle lives 20 minutes away. So that's not the same thing as shipping in, busing in, flying in protesters from across the country to do what they're doing. That is his neighborhood, 20 minutes away. And so I just wanted to correct the record on that. I got something this morning that's actually quite long, but it's a lot of ads going out looking for, in the Los Angeles Times, looking for protesters who are actors. We need you to come and, well, maybe, you know, hold banners, Black Lives Matter. There are all kinds of duties that they're laying out for them. I'm finding out that they're recruiting a lot of the people that they're showing in a lot of different ways. Craigslist, people are being sought on Craigslist. They're coming in. Of course, the unemployment rate is higher than it has been because of COVID. And so people are flocking to protest, but they are being paid. And so you heard a little bit about, David was just saying a little bit about what the administration is doing, but I want to give you some more specific things that's happening, because I think you need to be encouraged, right? we need to be encouraged. The president, by the way, is ordering the federal government to begin the process of defunding New York City and three other cities where officials allow lawless protests and cut police budgets amid rising violent crimes. It's a five-page memo. He's talking about New York City, Washington, D.C., Seattle, Portland, initial targets. As Trump makes, and by the way, I'm reading this from the New York Post, as Trump makes law and order a centerpiece of his reelection campaign after months of unrest and violence following the May killing of George Floyd in Minnesota. So the president is looking to defund these cities where the mayors don't seem to care and are just ignoring the violence in their streets and the destruction of commerce in their cities. And this is a tweet by President Trump. And it's, my administration will do everything in its power to prevent weak mayors and lawless cities from taking federal dollars while they let our anarchists harm people, burn buildings, and ruin lives and businesses. We're putting them on notice today. Okay, so that's one thing, but that's not the only thing. Two congressmen, Jim Jordan and James Comer, he's a Republican from Kentucky. They're both minority leaders on two major committees in the House. The majority, the persons in charge, the chairman, are always Democrats because the Democrats have the majority in the House. So these are the ranking Republicans on those committees. They sent a letter to D.C., to the mayor there, and this is part of what it says. Relating to D.C.'s response, if any, to violent left-wing agitators harassing peaceful individuals. And secondly, they want to ask about investigations on whether the perpetrators of the recent violence and intimidation have been paid or otherwise induced to commit these acts. The letter cites the intimidation and threats made against RNC guests leaving the last night of the convention, specifically Rand Paul and his wife, who said that the thugs, blank, quote, would have killed us had the police not been there, end quote. It also brings up the mobs that go to various restaurants, threatening guests, the fire set, assaults on police, all done under the mayor's watch. And this is what they say. Their words, your choice to surrender the streets of D.C. to violent left-wing extremists and agitators so that they can intimidate, coerce, and assault innocent people places at risk all who live, work, and patronize businesses in the district. Your actions also highlight the wisdom of the founders to ensure that the seat of the federal government is not beholden to any particular state. Okay, so that's part of what their letter says. So they're doing their part in Congress. Now, the problem is, of course, in D.C., it instituted, I think it was in the 70s, this thing called home rule, letting, even though the Constitution says that that particular area should not be a state and should be controlled by the federal government, because I think the founding fathers saw that there should not be some hostile force, you know, ruling that area where the seat of government is located. Some of us have wondered about that. And, of course, the people in D.C. have wanted to push for statehood for D.C. because it is a very leftist place. I have to tell you, driving, I've always lived in the outside, like in Virginia, right across the Potomac by the Pentagon. But you drive in, you know, across the Potomac and into the district, and immediately, honestly, I've said this to my husband for a long time, you feel like you are entering a hostile country. It's hard to explain. It's you feel in danger. This has been for years. And the parking, it's like the parking signs are intentionally confusing. They watch you and look for ways to tow or ticket you with exorbitant amounts. And so those are little things, but it's like harassment, and it's been in place for a long time. And that's the reason why the founder said, we don't want that particular area where the seat of government is to become a hostile territory, and that's what they've become. And so the Congress, led by the Democrats, whatever year it was, gave them what's called home rule. It's not necessarily constitutional, but it's a provision to let them rule themselves. And now people are calling for a rescission of that home rule, which would mean the federal government could remove Muriel Bowser and take back the streets of D.C. and bring things back in order. But the problem is we have a democratically controlled Congress led by Nancy Pelosi, and they're not going to do that. So that's what's happening. I want so many things. The Attorney General has also been waxing eloquent on this. Thank God to hear from him. He went to Kenosha with the president, and now they are going to be enforcing what's called the Travel Act. The Travel Act is a crime, is codified as a crime in the anti-racketeering chapter of the Federal Criminal Code. I'm reading from Andy McCarthy. It has been a staple of organized crime cases since the 1980s. It makes it a crime to travel across state lines or otherwise use facilities to interstate commerce and electronic communication devices to commit acts of violence or otherwise promote unlawful activity. And it goes on and on. A potential 20-year prison sentence. If death results, a defendant can be sentenced to any term of years or for life. That's a very mini thumbnail sketch of what the Travel Act is all about, and that's what they're going to be looking for in order to prosecute some of these violent people in the streets. I want to just play for you a montage someone brought my way. This is, you wonder how we got here and how it is that we have so much violence. This is a montage of Democrats. In the last few years, you will recognize many of their voices. Before the violence on our streets started breaking out, this is what they were saying. And I just want you to, I'll leave it to you to decide if they had anything to do with what's happening in our streets. Clip one.
I just don't even know why there aren't uprisings all over the country. Maybe there will be.
People need to start taking to the streets. This is a dictator.
You know, there needs to be unrest in the streets for as long as there's unrest in our lives.
Enemies of the state.
Show me where it says that protests are supposed to be polite and peaceful.
Do something about your dad's immigration practices, you feckless.
When they go low, we kick.
How do you resist the temptation to run up and wring her neck? The
biggest terror threat in this country is white men, most of them radicalized right up to the right.
I thought he should have punched him in the face. I said, even if you lost, he insulted your wife.
Yes.
He came down the escalator and called Mexicans rapists and murderers. He said, well, what do you think I should have done? I said, I think you should have punched him in the face and then gotten out of the race. You would have been a hero.
I'd like to punch him in the face. I said, if we were in high school, I'd take you behind the gym and beat the out of him.
Punch some people in the face!
When was the last time an actor assassinated a president?
They're still going to have to go out and put a bullet in Donald Trump, and that's a fact.
Look as his character is stabbed to death.
Where is John Wilkes Booth when you need him?
That's it right there, pulling up. I have thought an awful lot about blowing up the White House.
A Missouri state senator is under investigation by the Secret Service after saying she hopes President Trump is assassinated.
I will go and take Trump out tonight.
And if you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gasoline station, you get out and you create a crowd. And you push back on them. And you tell them they're not welcome anymore, anywhere.
And sadly, the domestic enemies to our voting system and our honoring our Constitution are right at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
They're not going to stop before Election Day in November, and they're not going to stop after Election Day. And that should be, everyone should take note of that on both levels, that this isn't, they're not going to let up, and they should not.
If you think we're rallying now, you ain't seen nothing yet.
All right, so that is, listen, all of those things, those clips you heard on this show over the last, 2 years? That was Kamala Harris toward the last. I've played that one a couple of times for you where she says they're not going to quit. They're going to be out on the streets, and they shouldn't quit. They need to be out there. You heard Maxine Waters saying if they're in restaurants, you know, don't let them be. They don't have a right to be there. They don't have a right to enjoy what you enjoy. You heard the Johnny Depp talking about where's John Wilkes Booth when we need him. You heard about Madonna. Remember, that was the day after the inauguration. I was in D.C. on that day. I couldn't believe the Women's March. They were already talking about violence and resistance in ways we'd never heard. But I still don't think we thought that we would see what we're seeing on our streets, that people would be. Another Trump supporter was kicked point blank in the head in Kenosha this week. That was the one act of violence. I don't know if you saw that on the screen. Horrible. Just horrible. He was down on the ground and someone just kicked him, which is what they seem to love to do. And so we have to stop this. And I wanted you to know that there are moves to stop this. And we're just hoping and praying they will have effect. I'll be right back after this. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Did you know that over 18 million babies have been aborted worldwide since January 1st? Every single one of these babies died during the COVID-19 pandemic. Why isn't the world declaring these babies as lost? Here's Dan Steiner, the president of Preborn, a ministry dedicated to saving babies' lives from abortion through ultrasound.
I sense God's broken heart over the issue of abortion. You see, he sees every little baby that's being formed in the mother's womb, and it breaks his heart to see when the lifetime that he has planned for them is taken from them violently so often.
Preborn clinics are the largest provider of free ultrasounds in the country and the direct competition to Planned Parenthood. Join Preborn in showing that these babies' lives are not forgotten. One ultrasound is $28. Five ultrasounds are $140. To donate, dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250, baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
Well, these are certainly tough, tough times, aren't they? Hi, it's Michael Woolworth with Bible League International, engaging the world with God's Word for more than 80 years at only $5 a Bible. You know, I'm grateful that God has given Bible League a platform for more than eight decades to address the other pandemic, and that's the shortage of Bibles all over the world in places like Asia, Africa, the Middle East, and Latin America. In fact, at Bible League, we determined that as few as one Christian in 10 has a Bible. What's that mean? That during this pandemic, many evangelical Christians elsewhere in the world cannot open their Bible and be reminded of God's promises, like 1 Peter 5:7, cast your cares on him, for he cares for you. But you know, during this time of sheltering in place, we can shelter in grace. Learn how you can be a blessing to believers around the world praying for a Bible by visiting sendbiblesnow.org. That's sendbiblesnow.org, or by calling Bible League at 800-YES-WORD, 800-YES-WORD.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Wondering how you'll finish your degree now? At Liberty University, we want to help. So when you transfer into one of our more than 100 undergraduate online programs this fall, you could earn up to $3,600 in transfer student scholarships, or more if you live in Virginia. That means you could pay less than $900 per course and transfer in up to 75% of your degree. That's up to 90 credits. Save time and money at a school that's been helping students like you for over 30 years. Learn more by texting DEGREE to 49595. That's DEGREE to 49595.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi got a blowout the other day visiting a posh San Francisco hair salon. Seen on video walking through the studio with wet hair, no face mask, her hairdo making national headlines because salons have been closed in San Francisco since March. So how is it possible that Speaker Pelosi was able to do what the average American is not? Salon owner Erica Klaus spilled the beans, angry over the sheer hypocrisy. She said it was a slap in the face. President Trump weighed in, pointing out that Pelosi and the Democrats have been constantly lecturing Americans about social distancing and wearing face masks, when in fact they are not following the same rules. He's got a point. A few months ago, Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot got a haircut, violating her own policy. Be sure to listen to my national radio show live noon to 3 Eastern, and be sure to download my free podcast at toddstearns.com.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Last night, when I turned on Fox, which I watch every night, even though I've told you that their news department has gone south, you already know that, right? I think they have some, there are people on the Fox News channel who are still holding fast to truth, and Tucker and Laura Ingraham and Sean Hannity and some others that I'm not, Steve Hilton probably, and others that I'm not thinking of in this moment. But in general, I find it pretty distressing. And you have to be careful when you watch. You have to find out who you can trust and who you can't. That's the true of every channel. It's true of radio. But last night I was just really struck. Kevin Cork, see, again, this is coming out of the news department. And these anchors, of course, for the most part, read what's written for them. I'm sure that some of them have something to do with what's... I remember where I used to host Crossfire at CNN. I would write... I insisted on writing my own openings because I didn't want someone putting words in my mouth. So, but I'm not sure they all do that. So I don't know if Kevin, you know, if he did that or not. But this is... I thought it very... This was a very interesting setup to a story about President Trump visiting, Wilmington, Delaware, I think it was, some veterans event. And I just want you to listen to how Kevin sets it up. Let's listen. It's clip 3.
With mail-in voting set to begin in the Tar Heel State as early as next week, you could argue the president's visit there was a little more than political theater. But White House officials insist a chance to thank the greatest generation for their heroism in World War II. Well, regardless of location, it was simply too good to pass up.
So this is supposed to be news, and this is subtle, but it, do you understand? The president goes to Wilmington, Delaware, and he's going to participate in some World War II veterans event. I don't know what that was exactly. And Kevin is setting up the story, you know, saying that the president went there and he's going to play a clip. But he says, you know, it's probably a little more than political theater that he went there. You know, even though the president said he's, you know, concerned about, you know, veterans and World War II vets, it's probably just not much more than political theater. And maybe just an opportunity that was just too good to pass up. And then he launches into his news report. You see, news reporters, I'm a commentator. As I said to you many times, I tell you what I think. I'm not a news person. I have an opinion, and you know what it is. I tell you all the time. But news persons are not to give their opinion. You know, Brett Baer is actually pretty good at not giving his opinion. He is a newsman. And but that was such a biased setup. I couldn't believe it. And then Kevin goes on to talk about how the new Fox poll shows that President Trump is way behind on the issue of COVID in all of these states. And they go through them exhaustively and they lay them out. And he's behind here. But it's all the question of COVID. That's the one they center on. If you look down in their numbers, you can see that on other issues, the president actually is beyond Joe Biden in some of these states. But they don't mention that. They talk about how he's handling COVID. Now, first of all, Fox polls have been notoriously skewed. I just don't think they're trustworthy. I really don't. But it is especially untrustworthy to pull out that one issue and only report verbally on what your poll says about that question to people and not point out that on the economy, the president's doing very well with voters in those states. Kevin didn't mention that. See, that's how it's twisted. It's crafted to make you think a certain way. And that doesn't mean the president isn't behind in some polls. I'm not saying that. I just know that when you set it up that way and when you report it that way and you don't tell all of your poll, there's something rotten in Denmark. There's something rotten, you know, on America's Plaza, which is where Fox is in downtown New York City. By the way, I miss going there. I used to work for them, you know, for 8 years. I loved it, and I loved Fox, and it makes me sad to have to say these things, but I have to be honest with you, as I always am. All right, so here, to counter that, I didn't play Kevin's report because what's the point? To counter that, you know, he centered in on the question of COVID. The Daily Caller just had a piece that came into my inbox as I was getting ready for you this morning. And says the Daily Caller has obtained a poll commissioned by America First Priorities, a nonprofit group aligned with President Donald Trump's reelection effort, showing that likely voters still care significantly more about jobs and the economy than any other issue heading into the 2020 election. 20% of all respondents listed jobs and the economy as their most important issue. 16% said the same of fighting COVID. Notably, only 3-4% listed upholding law and order and stopping racial injustice as the top election issue. 61% either didn't answer that question, don't have a preference, or named an issue outside the eight. Interesting. So I just want you know, you're being messed with by everyone, really, almost, when you hear these polls. It's very hard to trust a poll. This was an interesting one that came out yesterday. A post-Republican National Convention poll shows that President Donald Trump is taking a firm lead over Joe Biden. Now, that's not what the Fox poll says. It says the opposite. It says that Biden's ahead, you know, by 7 points here, 8 points here. So, I don't know. It's a Democracy Institute Sunday Express poll. Found Trump ahead of Biden by 3 percentage points. In the average of key swing states, the margin is an even greater 8 points as the president leads 49-41%. So, I don't know. Oh, and then interestingly, 21% of respondents indicated that the Republican convention made them more likely to vote for President Trump, while 9% said that they were less likely. So that's just from my perspective, that's the story there. It's still not, nothing's in the bag. It's close enough that we don't really know. And speaking of that, on the voting, several of you emailed me this morning saying that you did call to sign up to be a poll worker on Election Day. Some of you were confused. I want to repeat, we don't need you to go be a volunteer poll watcher. That is, at this point, not valuable. We want you to go and get hired to be in the room as a poll worker. And they are paying a nice amount in many places to do that. I know that's beside the point for most of you, but you, some of you could probably use the money. But the point is that we need people of integrity inside those voting rooms. If you have not called to do this, we will place on our Facebook page, don't wait for that, because you can call your county. You know, use some initiative. Call your county and tell them you want to sign up to be a worker at the polls on Election Day. They are desperate for workers, and if they don't, this will be an excuse for them to have fewer voting places, because supposedly everybody in the universe is scared to death of COVID. And so they're not going to go vote, and they're looking for any excuse they can to reduce the number of polling places and therefore increase the amount of mail-in voting, and that will be a disaster. So please, will each and every one of you that's capable and able, call your county and tell them you want to be, you don't want to volunteer to be, no, you're not volunteering. You don't want to volunteer. You want to get hired to be a worker in the poll. Okay, so that's about as clear as I know how to make it. And if that doesn't make sense to you, let me play for you an exchange between Wolf Blitzer and Attorney General Barr. Pretty stunning back and forth. They were sitting together for a long time, and it got pretty contentious. I won't play that first part, but AG Barr finally says, you're skirting the issue. You're asking me about something. And then he says, let me talk. And I'll let you hear Attorney General Barr as he sorts Wolf out on the issue of mail-in balloting. This is clip 15.
This is a, you know, sort of cheap talk to get around the fundamental problem, which is the bipartisan commission chaired by Jimmy Carter and James Baker said back in 2009 that mail-in voting is fraught with the risk of fraud and coercion.
But since then, let
me talk.
Yeah, please.
And since that time, there have been, in the newspapers, in networks, academic studies, saying it is open to fraud and coercion. The only time the narrative changed is after this administration came in. But elections that have been held with mail have found substantial fraud and coercion. For example, we indicted someone in Texas, 1,700 ballots collected from people who could vote. He made them out and voted for the person he wanted to. Okay?
Because
that kind of thing happens with mail-in ballots, and everyone knows it.
But there are individual cases, but as far as widespread fraud, we haven't seen that since...
We haven't had the kind of widespread use of mail-in ballots that's being proposed. We've had absentee ballots from people who request them from a specific address. Now what we're talking about is mailing them to everyone on the voter list when everyone knows those voter lists are inaccurate. People who should get them don't get them, which is what has been one of the major complaints in states that have tried this in municipal elections. And people who get them are not the right people. They're people who have replaced the previous occupant, and they can make them out. And sometimes multiple ballots come to the same address with a whole several generations of occupants. Do you think that's a way to run a vote?
Well, the only thing I'm saying is that so far we haven't seen widespread fraud, but
so far we haven't tried it.
Well,
and the point
there's
is,
been a lot of us. There are several states that only have mail-in voting, including a Republican.
Well, this
state
is
like
playing
Utah.
With fire. This is playing with fire. We're a very closely divided country here, and if people have to have confidence in the results of the election and the legitimacy of the government, and people trying to change the rules to this methodology, which, as a matter of logic, is very open to fraud and coercion, is reckless and dangerous, and the people are playing with fire.
All right, so there you go. So people are playing with fire. So I don't care. Look, I know the Republicans are going on this. The party is doing this texting effort. I've gotten texts. Order your ballot, your mail-in ballot. I don't care what they say, even what they say. No, you go vote in person. Vote in person. Vote in person. If you want your vote counted, vote in person. Even on a good day, 20% of mail-in ballots get lost. Even on a good day. Do not just make a plan. Make sure you're healthy. You know, go to the polls. Go to the polls. Present your ID. If it's required, it should be required everywhere in your polling place, and go vote. Mark your own ballot. Make sure it goes into the slot and you see it do that. Okay? And for many of you, I just heard from Valerie down in Goochland. She said, I signed up to be a poll worker online. She said, I'm going to be a poll worker. So please, will you do that too? Please, 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 will you do that? You ask me what you can do, that's what you can do. All right, I want to talk quickly about Nancy Pelosi. We all know now that she was famously on a camera that's part of the salon. She was seen getting her hair done. Why is that such a big deal? Because hair salons in L.A. and San Francisco and California in general have not been able to work. I'm going to run out of time here. Let me just say they've been shut down twice. They spent, these poor people, they spent tons of money, thousands, trying to get their salons ready, separating plexiglass, washing, cleaning, everything. And Gavin Newsom came in right before they were to open and shut them down again. And they are suffering. So Nancy Pelosi goes into this place and, you know, she makes an appointment. And lo and behold, she, unlike anybody else in California, gets a haircut and her hair done. It's illegal in California to do that in any salon. They've all been shut down. And this is what she had to say when she was called out on it. Clip 11.
I take responsibility for trusting the word of a neighborhood salon that I've been to over the years many times. And that when they said what we're able to accommodate people one person at a time and that we can set up that time, I trusted that. As it turns out, it was a setup. So I take responsibility for falling for a setup.
All right, I'm going to interrupt her. So basically she's saying she had no idea. Why, she had no idea that hair salons in California were shut down and that people were losing their businesses. She had no idea when they called. And she's saying she was set up, like they brought her in clandestinely, turned on the camera and tried to catch her. And so the salon owner was on with Tucker last night. I want you to hear her because my heart went out to her. I want you, it's Erica Kaus. She's the salon owner. Let's listen.
For the past 6 months, we're pretty much done. Mm. I mean, we've lost at least 60% of our clients. I've lost the majority of my staff. So, you know, 6 months is a long time to be closed down. To be honest, it was more hurtful. She's been coming in for quite a while. And just to see her come in, and especially not wearing the mask, that's what really got to me. But, yes, you know, this isn't even political. I mean, she's been coming in there. It's the fact that she actually came in and didn't have a mask on. And I just thought about, you know, my staff and people not being able to work and make money and provide for their families. And if she's in there comfortably without a mask and feeling safe, then why are we shut down? Why am I not able to have clients come in? I'll be honest, in our area in San Francisco, I mean, we're obviously the last county or city to not open. We've been trying to figure that out. We've been asking ourselves these questions for 6 months, for the past actually 4 months of why we are not reopened. And that's kind of a good question. We, again, don't know.
What are you going to do? Are you going to stay in the city, do you think, in San Francisco?
I don't think so. The hard part of all this is that I have been in that community for 12 years. And since this happened, I have received nothing but hate, text messages, death threats. They're going to burn my hair salon down. My Yelp page is just unbelievable with bad reviews.
Okay,
it's
so just, you get the point.
Erica Kaus, salon owner.
She's going to lose her business. And so she was on with Tucker last night. Now, let me just point something out to you. Because we know that Lori Lightfoot did the same thing with hair. Mary de Blasio went out to eat when no one else in the city, according to his dictate, could go out. Anthony Fauci went to the game, did not wear a mask. Okay, so the point is, yes, they are hypocrites. I've said that. Yes, they are hypocrites. And they are elitists because they can do things that you're not allowed to do by their own dictates. How dare they? But here's the second part. Listen to me. I just flew again yesterday and I saw how shut down and ridiculous and George Orwellian the airports and the airlines are. This also says to you, it's not that threatening or they wouldn't do it. COVID is not that threatening or they wouldn't do that.
Exposing Washington. With Walker Wildman. And here they are testifying that Donald J. Trump should be impeached. They've never even met him. Happens every day. You do this, I'll do this. That's how Washington works.
Exposing Washington.
These bureaucrats think that they're in charge.
Exposing Washington. Each Saturday at 2:30 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney, host of Secure Freedom Radio. It's your personal daily intelligence briefing about the challenges we face, how they're likely to affect you, and what we can do about them. You can find Secure Freedom Radio here every weeknight at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. Tune in to learn from our extraordinary experts what you need to know and will want to share. Join us for Secure Freedom Radio tonight at 11 Eastern, right here on AFR.
For you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. According to a recent study published by the Christian Post, 76.3% of all abortions are obtained by, quote, God-fearing women, unquote, with 68.7% who identified themselves as Christian women and 18% of all abortions obtained by self-described born-again or evangelical women. A corresponding CareNet study found that many women with unplanned pregnancies go silently from the church pew to the abortion clinic, convinced the church would gossip rather than help. America's greatest need is repentance. When the hearts of the American people turn to God, everything else will be impacted.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with the Life and Liberty Minute. The main problem with defunding the police is that it will impact black neighborhoods the most. While morally superior regressives howl about police brutality, blacks themselves want a greater police presence in their neighborhoods. A recent Gallup poll found that 81% of African Americans oppose reducing the police presence where they live. Only 19% of blacks own guns for their own protection, so they are almost entirely dependent upon cops to protect them from the bad guys. It is telling that black mayors of many large cities oppose defunding the police, but white limousine liberals, who think they are smarter than these black mayors, want to force minority neighborhoods to have less and less protection from evil. That sounds like racism to me.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. German Chancellor Angela Merkel yesterday announced that Alexei Navalny, Russian dictator Vladimir Putin's most prominent opponent, had been poisoned with a highly toxic chemical weapon known as Novichok. A top Navalny lieutenant declared, "That agent's use is like leaving Putin's signature at the crime scene." The victim now lies comatose in a hospital in Germany, further roiling bilateral relations already strained by Putin's past aggression in Ukraine and Russian operatives' recent hacking of Merkel's official email account. Some speculate more sanctions on Russia may ensue. Unfortunately, Putin knows he's going to get away once again with murder, figuratively, if not literally, in this case. Thanks to Chancellor Merkel's decision to bring online the so-called Nord Stream 2 natural gas pipeline, Germany is about to become even more comprehensively dependent on Russia for energy. As the Kremlin's chess-playing despot would say, checkmate. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. Hey, listen, I want to talk to you. You've heard me talk a lot this week about everything, and you've been watching the news. You have eyes and ears. You're seeing what's happening around you. So I just want you to have something important to say. Okay, that's the kind of calls we're looking for. And so if you had something you want to report that you saw or some comment that is salient, that would be good. We'd love to hear from you. Our phone number is 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. This is an email that I got from Brenda. She said, she doesn't say what state, but she says, "I worked the primary election recently and felt uneasiness as I noticed a multitude of vehicles in the church parking lot. There were many more vehicles than workers, probably at least three times as many. My husband suggested it was a park and ride, but with the shutdown, most people aren't working. Then in the middle of the day, I went out to my car and got into the passenger side to place my lunchbox. There was a woman in the vehicle beside me. She had blue dyed hair, and she jumped when she saw me. It was almost as if I had caught her in something. This uneasiness lasted all day. When I went outside to work the drive-up tent, I felt very vulnerable. It almost felt like this was a practice run, or they were casing the place, planning for destruction or an attack on Election Day. I want to do my part. I've worked elections before, and I want to work this one in November, but I'm not sure we'll be safe. Just asking for advice or guidance. I want to be strong, but there's an ominous feeling about that day. Brenda, I can't speak to what you described. You know, some of that could be just your own feelings. But generally speaking, people say, you know, if you have a certain feeling about something, about a person, or you feel threatened, that you should go with your gut. I can't think why protesters or anarchists would want to do anything at a balloting place. I think that what the left has in mind is stealing and manipulating, not violence, in terms of actual voters. I don't think we're there, and I don't think that would serve any purpose for them. So I personally think that you're safe, except that you're not safe in the sense that if you see them, you know, some hanky-panky and you speak up, you might get in some trouble. But that's the whole point, isn't it? And we're all going to get in some trouble. I guess the thing of it is, all of the stuff we're seeing on the streets and all the hatefulness we're seeing, you know, out when people are trying to eat, you are not going to be able to escape it. If we don't fight now, it's going to be everywhere. In your town, my town, if it can come to Little Kenosha, trust me, it can come to any of your towns. Some of you, you know, have already seen it, and it hasn't been reported. A lot of smaller cities have had trouble with this kind of unrest and danger. So the whole point is that we fight now before it's out of hand. They need to know that there are lots of us who are willing to fight. Are we willing to fight? Are we willing to fight and stand up to this? Are we going to hide behind our shutters and blame COVID? I just, and Brenda, I'm not saying you're doing that, but I'm just saying, you know, be bold and brave. And I really don't think there's any real danger at polling places. Now, this next one is from Joan. And she asked me, she's saying we need a national day of prayer or fasting. Something like President Lincoln did during the Civil War. I would say that, and I don't have this in front of me to tell you, maybe Devin can look this up for me, but the Franklin Graham is having a prayer march in Washington, D.C., from the Capitol to the, no, starting at the Lincoln Memorial, going to the Capitol. And that's going to happen on Saturday, September the 20th, whatever, 24th, something like that. I don't have a calendar in front of me here. Wait, let me see. No, that's the wrong month. See, that's why I want to do this. It takes too much of our time. The 26th. And so you can sign up for that to go. And also the Harbinger, the guy, Jonathan Kahn, who wrote The Harbinger, and Graham Lotz, James Dobson, are also holding National Day of Prayer on the Mall that day on September the 26th. Now, I'm going to be there. And I would just say you should consider going too. Look, it's going to be dangerous. I think it's probably going to be dangerous. There'll be some danger there, but I want to go and pray in my nation's capital, and maybe some of you would like to too. So the Jonathan Kahn event is called The Return, and you can find it online. And Franklin Graham's event you can find, I'm sure, if you Google Franklin Graham, and I think he's been advertising actually. On BillyGraham.org is the way to find that. All right, I want to go hear what you have to say. Let's go to Mississippi and talk to Billy. Good morning, Billy. Good morning, Billy.
Hey, good morning, Sandy. This is Bill. I'm sorry, I thought you said Bill. congratulations in Mississippi and in Mississippi. I'm from Mississippi, so congratulations. I wish I could meet you.
I could meet you, too.
I can't tell you why back you're one of my favorite radio personalities, but
thank you
for doing what you do, Sandy. I just don't understand how people can go vote for democratically, especially people that believe in God. I mean, you have all these principles that they are violating and don't stand for, and it's straight out of the Bible. And I just have a hard problem with it. But Another thing I wanted to mention, too, is about Biden flip-flopping on about three different stances he's taken. Over the last week, he flip-flops as he started coming out of his basement. He's flip-flopping about three different things, and that's another reason I don't understand why people can go vote for these people. But thank you for what you do, Sandy. And
hey, John, Bill, hang on just a second. Well, what do you think about people around you? Are you seeing minds change about – there's been such hatred for Donald Trump. I mean, people just really hate him. It's just – are you seeing a shift in that at all?
Well, the thing about it is, I mean, even when I'm a black American, and when I'm not Afro American, I'm black, man. I've never been to Africa, and I don't think I'm Afro American. But anyway, that's another story.
You know what? I'm a Cherokee Indian American. Have I told you that? Because I am. I'm going to start leading with that. Anyway, okay, go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, but now let's get into the Democratic game about identical politics. I mean, we're all one race, and
yes.
That's what you've been preaching. That's what I believe also, Sandy. But it's just a thing that, you know, I can hear them talking about Trump. And you almost had to start a war, man, to defend. I mean, not even for Trump, but just what's right and what's common sense. And the thing about when you ask about these people hate, it's just so much hatred for Trump that they don't do anything and say anything and believe anything. And that's when they don't help guide him. And that's why I called you a while back and told you about Romans 1:22 about the professing fields be wise and paying fools. And 28-29, where it really say they don't have God in their life. And when you operate without God in your life, I mean, you'll do anything. You'll believe anything. You'll say anything. And that's where all the hatred is coming from. This country has shifted. I'm not supposed to be all this about God, but it's straight out of the playbook. It's a playbook to live by. God's word, and nobody wants to live by it. They want to do their own thing and not profess to God. And
Bill, does it? So what goes through my mind, you know, that phrase in scripture, and everyone did what was right in his own eyes. You're absolutely right that your diagnosis is spot on, Bill. And maybe sometimes I think, you know, I should be talking about Jesus more than I do politics, but I'm trying to present truth as a gateway to understanding that there is a God and there is a right and wrong and there is a Savior. And heaven knows, when we look on the streets right now, and we look at all this murder, I think of how God hated the violence that men did, and that's why he sent the flood. We cannot last long anywhere. The earth cannot withstand God's wrath if we don't actually turn to him and embrace his ways, which are the ways, you know, higher, nobler ways, the way of living that honors him and is the best plan for man's treatment of other men. So, Bill, thanks. Your powerful call, and it's really nice to have a conversation with you. Thank you. Let's go to Steve in Texas. Good morning, Steve.
Hello.
Good morning, Steve.
Steve from Texas.
Yes, sir. What's on your mind?
Okay. I wanted to give you a shout out for some remarks you were making. I cut in about halfway through your program this morning, so I don't know what happened in the first 25 minutes, but I'm glad to finally see, hear somebody speak up about a way to get involved at the community level in the political process. You know, the left has kind of eaten our lunch on the whole community organization thing, and I've wondered for a while now how people on our side of the aisle can get involved in that. And you provided one very concrete way to do that by getting involved in the polls. I'm sure there's others, and I'd love to hear more ideas on how people can get involved that and kind of combat that. We need to be able to have similar efforts on our side, I think, to do things like that. I was glad to hear you come up with that.
Yeah, let me just give you a couple of other practical things, Steve. I should have a list that by my desk here, but I don't. So from the top of my head, this is another practical thing you can do. Choose a candidate or candidates, but choose a candidate and support them. Now, if you don't have the kind of money to actually give to a campaign, even though, you know, whatever you give would be helpful, you can, they need people to make calls to walk precincts. Like in Texas, Chip Roy is in trouble. Chip is a champion in Congress. He's a champion. And the left hates him. He was the former chief of staff for Ted Cruz. Chip is such a stalwart. So, you know, down in Texas, he needs help. You could drive to Austin and help Chip Roy. You know, I don't mean that all of you have to drive somewhere to do this. You can make phone calls to constituents from your own home and your own phone. You know, so pick a candidate, and they don't have to be in your state. They can be somebody that's caught your eye. John James in Michigan. a great candidate is, you know, actually he's doing very well in the polls, but that doesn't mean he's going to win. It's Michigan. So I'm just saying, pay attention, pick somebody that you can't do it all. But you know what? If you could work at the polls, which is what Steve's referring to me saying earlier, call your local county governance and get hired. Don't volunteer, get hired to work in the polls. That's one of the biggest things you can do to make sure that we have mail. Tell your friends, do not do a mail-in ballot. And you can just tell them this, 20% on a normally good day when the post office is functioning get lost. You can also tell them this, ask them a question. Let's say, my friend Mary, that you won the lottery. Would you take your ticket and put it in an envelope and seal it and mail it back to the post office? Or would you go hand carry that ticket so that you make sure that your number's counted? I think I know the answer. So you can ask people a question like that. So advocate for voting in person, be a poll worker, and support a candidate. And that's some pretty good stuff to do. And you've only got, 70-something days to do that. Steve, it's really nice to hear from you. Thanks for giving me an opportunity to expand on that. And God bless you. All right, let's go to Alex in Michigan. Good morning, Alex.
Hey there, Sandy. I was just calling because I'm alarmed by the fact that this country's going through nothing short of a communist revolution, and the pastors in this country won't call it out. Media is co-opted by the communists from their indoctrination at these universities. Kids are getting taught more about Karl Marx than they are about George Washington and Thomas Jefferson. And unless people wake up to the fact this country's going to, the United States Constitution is going to be gone within a decade, and there's going to be a new America, and Colin Kaepernick and LeBron James are going to be considered founding fathers. But it's not a good place where this country is, and I think it's the church is asleep. If they're not willing to stand up against not wearing a mask, they're not going to be able to stand up to real dictatorship and tyranny. They're going to cower and quiver like a bunch of sissies, and we need men to stand up and speak out, because silence is going to kill us all. And that's all I wanted to say.
Alex, very well said. Alex, how old are you?
33.
All right, so you actually, technically speaking, have grown up in the indoctrination, unless you were homeschooled, in the indoctrination of public... Okay, how'd you get so smart? How'd you get so smart?
The grace of God, there go I. You know, if I had taken the time to go to a university, I probably would be indoctrinated too. But just the fact that I'm willing to think independently and don't believe everything I see on TV or on Facebook, it allows you to be free and have an open mind.
Yeah, good. God bless you, Alex. I wish we had more time. Dan in Texas, you have the last word. Quickly, if you can.
Hello.
Quickly, if you can. Hello. Dan, good morning.
Oh, good morning. I just wanted to say, ever since I moved to Texas, I've been having a hard time finding a good preacher. Can't find someone that's given a balanced message and telling the flock what's going on out in America. They won't call up a Democrat by name, and I'm just having a hard time finding someone to lead me and my family through this whole thing.
Yeah, Dan, I feel the same way, and this is why I've been calling pastors out in the most loving way. I've just said this just last week, pastors, these are your people. Your people are the ones getting beaten in the streets. Your people are the ones who have children who are demonstrating out there. Some of them are demonstrating out there. That your kids are the ones who are being forced to use, you know, to believe that men can have menstruation periods and that girls can use boys' restrooms. You've got to speak up. You hear your people calling in here. You've got to take a stand. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.